The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. And after all the talk, all the speculation, all the criticism of the players and the board, all the boring, insipid performances and poor results, Colin Calderwood is unveiled as the new manager of Cambridge United. And with that bombshell, a great time for Manchester United to bury the good news that Jose Mourinho is out and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is in for a bit. And then we await the big fight between Daniel Levy and Ed Woodward. I've written the big 10 questions on United for our panel to answer. And if there's time after that, we'll open the Carabao box, give Fitbar some much needed attention and look ahead to another big weekend of football. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Barry Glendening, nice to see you.
To see you, nice, Max Rushton.
Hey, John Bruin.
Hello, Max Rushton.
How are you?
All right, yeah.
And a very warm welcome to Ewan Murray.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, Barry has quite often on this podcast described you as more grumpy than him. And I'm looking forward to seeing this.
I have to play grumpy here then.
No. You can just be yourself. And then, because Barry...
you can be one of the other dwarfs.
you've given me a cup of coffee and everything here. I've got no reason to be grumpy yet.
And we were just saying before the pod that you have invented in your mind an apocryphal story that someone recognised Barry's voice in the street and punched him in the face.
I believe this to be true. I'm sure Barry told me this story.
I'm pretty sure it didn't. Someone recognised my voice in a pub and told me they really didn't like me in the strongest possible terms, but there was no violence.
Didn't push you or punch you or kick you.
Okay. So if anybody is in or around the Brixton area and doesn't like Barry, wander around and recognise his voice and we'll see if he comes in with a black eye on Monday.
Are you sure that's... Why?
No, actually,
I'll be at home in the warm bosom of my family, so to speak, on Monday, so I won't be here.
Wish the Glendennings a happy Christmas.
I will.
Okay, then, Jose Mourinho was fired at 9:50 on Tuesday morning, which was great news for all of us who had to do a three-hour football phone-in with nothing to talk about. Solskjaer's in until the end of the season, and then who knows, Pochettino, the strong candidate. Jose arrived in 2016, won the League Cup, the Europa League and the Community Shield, if anyone counts that. But the football was terrible for the whole time, really. I said I had 10 questions. I mean, I may have five, I may have a million. It depends how long we want to take on this. John, were you surprised by the timing?
Yes, everybody was. You weren't surprised by the fact that Jose Mourinho was going to get sacked by Manchester United. That was an inevitability. Actually, 3 years ago, I was thinking about this. 3 years ago, Jose Mourinho had just been sacked by Chelsea. I think he was sacked on December the 16th. He lasted a day longer this time around. And I remember Manchester United lost at Stoke City on Boxing Day. And at this point, the papers were full of the fact that Jose Mourinho should be the next manager of Manchester United. And even then, when it seemed an inevitability and that United would need to scratch that Mourinho itch, you knew which way it was going to end. And it ended in the same way it ended at Chelsea, at Real Madrid, with players not too unhappy that Jose Mourinho is not at the club anymore.
Mm. I mean, a lot's being made of a grainy photo of Luke Shaw with his thumbs up. I mean, he could have just been, you know, listening.
Doing an impression of Paul McCartney.
Or just listening to his favourite comedy podcast. Who knows? Does having no replacement and no long-term, you know, straight in, does that suggest the board, something happened, the Liverpool game was the last straw, or they saw the draw against PSG and went, we're going to get done here? Like, is it a panic button situation?
Well, the first thing I notice is Alex Ferguson's influence is clearly still very strong there. When Solskjaer appears, that to me shows that Ferguson now has, you know, a lot of input in that. I think Sunday was obviously the final straw. The problem comes, I'm saying it's a problem, if Solskjaer does very, very well, wins something, there'll be pressure to give him the job. Now, clearly their long-term plan is not to give him the job, but say he wins the FA Cup or beats PSG or whatever he does, and it's deemed a success, inevitably they'll come under pressure to, well, why don't we just give him the job long-term? And that clearly is not part of their current plan. Mm-hmm. So that could become a sticky issue for them.
He's the new Roberto Di Matteo. As you tweeted, John, didn't you? The idea that the player who scores the most important goal for any club becomes the manager or the caretaker manager of that club.
Well, it did happen with Real Madrid, though, didn't it? Because Zidane scored that goal in Glasgow 2002 and then became the manager that won three Champions Leagues in a row. That strategy can work. Though I'm not sure how Jimmy Glass at Carlisle United...
Paul Dickoff at taking over from Pep.
Yeah, Tony Ubo at Leeds United. I mean, it could work. It's a crazy plan. And I think Ewan referred to the Ferguson effect. Sir Alex is still about. He was at Anfield last week. It seemed to me the formula for this new caretaker manager was that they had to be in Sir Alex's good books, which ruled out Roy Keane, Mark Hughes, and that it couldn't be a member of the class of 92 because Ed Woodward has fallen out with them and they've criticised him in the media. And that left quite a small pool. So Ollie it was.
You can't get away from his previous job in English football, which was pretty much a disaster, wasn't it? I mean, he signed all the really poor players at Cardiff. It ended up a mess. You can't ignore that and just say he's a Manchester United playing hero. He's close to Ferguson and others, ergo this will be okay.
Is it too simplistic that people like him, you know?
I think, for a start, the dressing room just needs a lift. You've a load of disaffected players who've been playing with sort of one hand or one leg tied behind their backs. I would imagine the departure of Mourinho will have given them a lift, someone coming in. I got the sense that basically the United hierarchy are just writing this season off. If anything good that happens will be a bonus, but bring in Ollie, give the players a lift, get morale, you know, improved, and if we can avoid a gubbing by PSG or possibly get a good cup run, grand, but otherwise, you know, just don't get relegated. So by appointing a manager whose only previous experience in English football as a manager is getting relegated and doing really badly, it's a bit of a risk, but they should be okay.
You mentioned the players, and it was interesting when I was doing this phone in 10 minutes after he got the boot. A lot of Manchester United fans are ringing in saying the players deserve a lot of the blame for this because they're always on Instagram or they're releasing clothing brands. And I just wondered if that is a total smokescreen and it's nonsense. Footballers train for 2-3 hours a day and then they've got the afternoon and actually they're better off engaging in quite interesting pursuits rather than 30 years ago just going to the pub and drinking or just playing Fortnite these days.
I think the players deserve a lot of blame, not for gadding about on social media, though. That's a generational thing, you know, a middle-aged Talksport listener that might not be into that. But like you say, it's...
But ex-players, you know, Gary Neville was saying Lingard shouldn't be releasing a clothing brand on the week of the Liverpool game.
Well, I don't really see what the point is. Like, how hands-on is Jesse Lingard in the release of this clothing brand? Is he
embroidering?
Yeah. Is he backstage at a fashion show, you know, chiding models or stitching them into...
Gary Neville's best friend in football is David Beckham. Yeah, the ultimate in releasing clothing brands.
I think that's less of an issue. I think what reflects poorly is the apparent celebration of the manager losing his job.
Yeah.
I don't think that looks good at all.
The Pogba Instagram that was captioned this with a sort of knowing look, which he then since has said it was an automated tweet.
Yeah, I think that to me reflects poorly if footballers are seen to revel in the manager losing his job. I understand he was maybe not well liked by many of them, but I don't think that's a good or, dare I say, professional look.
So if they come out and play brilliantly on Saturday and they're released, is that a lack of professionalism for the players or the fact that Jose wasn't able to communicate with these young people? You know, he just couldn't do it. And if he can't motivate them, then that's a big problem for him.
Yeah, he's 55. His career is probably not over. I mean, there's already links that he's going to go back to Real Madrid. And you wonder how he will communicate with players of a younger generation. His technique appeared to be to want hardened, grizzled veterans about. But there comes a point when even the hardened, grizzled veterans are much younger than him and from a different standpoint than him. I think the problem with the Manchester United players is that they need to play well for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and whoever comes next, because there comes a point where if you play badly for four managers, then you're probably a bad player. And their reputations are at stake now. the Mourinho problem has been removed. Pogba in particular, someone who Solskjaer was close to when they worked together in the youth ranks, really has to step up. But still, there will be those that criticise him for stepping up, saying you didn't come enough through for Jose Mourinho. There will be some that would say that both of them had to leave the club, that both Mourinho and Pogba had to go. And I think a sizable section of Manchester United fans still want Pogba to be sold on.
I mean, Pogba's an asset, isn't he? If you're cynical about it, you can't get away from the fact.
Yeah.
If you're the Manchester United board, Pogba is a fiscal asset that they spent a lot of money on, who can be worth a lot of money. He's not just easily disposable, or he shouldn't be.
Hmm. I mean, you mentioned the board, and that is another problem, isn't it? I mean, you've got this idea that getting rid of Jose is a good thing. Right? We all thought he should go, and he wasn't doing a great job. But Ed Woodward has made three bad appointments, and is making the next appointment. You know, the Glazers just want to make money; don't seem to care how well the football team do. I mean, I guess it's how long will United be profitable if they keep finishing fifth or sixth, Barry? Is that how it works?
Well, Ed Woodward certainly deserves a program for it. These bad appointments, but he is making money for the club in other fields with noodle partners and official urinal partners and car partners and soft drink partners all over the world. And ultimately, the Glazers are only interested in the bottom line. Paul Pogba is there. He may not be delivering on the pitch, but he's delivering on Instagram, and he's getting those clicks and likes which lead to merchandising purchases and whatnot. I would imagine the Glazers are happy enough with Woodward's performance at the moment, but, you know, Mourinho's appointment was bad. Everyone was pretty sure it wasn't going to work out. I'm not so sure. I'm puzzled why people think the timing of his dismissal was odd, because he was obviously going to be dismissed at some point, and, you know, Tuesday morning seemed as good a time as any. You know, we said in here in August he'd be gone by Christmas, and lo, it has come to pass. So I'm a bit puzzled by that, why people were shocked by it. It's big news. It's not surprising news, though.
No.
They seem to want a sporting director. I find that a funny phrase. I don't know what other sport they play apart from football, but a director of football. So that suggests that they're looking at changing the way that the football side of the club is structured.
But the thing about that is they want Maurizio Pochettino, and he won't want a director of football. He insisted that there wasn't one at Spurs. He's, you know, from Levy to him, they don't have a director of football. So if United appoint a director of football, then that might harm their chances of getting Pochettino.
I mean, I heard someone say the best thing Man United do was get Pochettino and Daniel Levy, and then although I know, would Daniel Levy be negotiating with himself? And that's a tortuous issue. So then what next for Jose, right? Because I mean, Jonathan Wilson wrote a great piece about you know, everything that was wrong with Jose. You know, every other elite team in Europe can do the high press. Jose's teams can't do that. His pride on his defense, his team couldn't do that. He came up with this thing called the lack of automations, which I don't know if you read this. It was interesting, saying that basically Jose thinks football is too random to come up with sequences in attack, whereas Pep or Klopp or Pochettino exactly think that's how football should be. It's this thing that you've been talking about, Barry, about football is passing him by now.
Yeah, I think it has. He's not able to communicate with young players properly. In part, that's down to the players, I think, and you know, I'm a curmudgeonly old git at this stage, but they don't take kindly to getting a boot up the arse or a rollicking, and particularly not a public one. I think that's a bit odd. They should be able for that, but they're not, and that's a fact, and that's Mourinho's way of doing business. But sorry, what was the question again?
Is what next for Jose?
Oh, what next for him? I have no doubt he will get other jobs, you know, if all else fails, to be a lucrative offer from China, which he would possibly accept and no doubt hate, because he'd be out of the limelight. He could well go back to Real Madrid. There'll be offers in Italy, I'd imagine. There's always the Portugal job. I think Jose, to be honest, needs a nice long holiday, because He
not in a hotel, maybe an Airbnb.
Yeah, not in a hotel.
Even that was weird, wasn't it? The arrangement was weird.
Yeah.
Who lives in a hotel for 2.5 years? That's just insane. It really is.
Barry, I would love to know. I know from people at Chelsea, the first time he was at Chelsea, everyone at the club loved him.
Yeah.
He was so popular with all the staff, etc. And the second time, that was completely different. I mean, in terms of how he interacted with other people at the club. I think he had a couple of coaches and that was it. So what happened? What
Something changed? At Real Madrid happened, didn't it?
Yeah, the Real Madrid one was... I heard something a while back, which was that when Jose Mourinho was at his height, which would be at Porto, at Chelsea, at Inter, he didn't care what anybody thought about him because he was so assured of himself. And there came a point where he started to read the press. And the press in Italy had not been completely complimentary, but the press in Spain, of course, where you've got newspapers that one's pro-Barcelona, one's pro-Madrid, and even the pro-Madrid ones were not always pro-Mourinho, it started to eat into him. His ego was more fragile than it had been a few years ago. Now, another thing that I heard was that he actually discovered the internet and he started reading about himself. And I've got this image of Jose sat in the Lowry, room service at the side, just on Twitter, name searching Mourinho, and that is a road to ruin, if ever there was.
Isn't it? Ken Early in the Irish Times wrote a really interesting comparing Jose and Napoleon.
With references to Hegel.
Yeah,
My father sent me a text yesterday going, Ken Early's set the bar fairly high in today's time. And I went back, fairly question mark. Sam Glendening is a hard man to please.
he not only wrote a nice article, he also got a 2-1 in modern history, didn't he, at the same time. But saying that Jose's whole insecurity is about not being accepted by the elite, you know, the sort of aristocracy, because he was never a great player. And there comes a level of club, and it is somewhere between Chelsea and Manchester United and Real Madrid, where it can't be about you, right? It can be about you at Chelsea. It probably can at Spurs. It can't be about you at the absolute top level of football.
Yeah, he isn't Bobby Charlton. He isn't Alex Ferguson. He isn't Alfredo Di Stefano. Again, that's a curious thing about Jose Mourinho, this thing about how he's not a football person and he's an outsider. His dad was a professional goalkeeper, managed clubs in Portugal, presumably really well connected in football, which helped him get into the game.
It's like saying Nigel Farage isn't the elite, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's that, which, I mean, how much of our world is made up of these people that consider themselves an outsider when actually are granted all the privileges that they would actually need?
Hmm. So do we think Pochettino will be at Manchester United at the start of next season?
I don't know. He's in a terrific position. I mean, this dismissal has just put Pochettino on the pig's back, as we say at home. He's going to be offered this job, and they're going to offer him a ridiculous amount of money, even if he doesn't want it. And I would imagine he probably does. You know, it's Spurs are a big club, Manchester United are on another level. But it puts him in a position of, you know, he has great leverage now at Tottenham. He can go to Daniel Levy and say, look, Manchester United want me, they're offering me this. I want you to pay me similar. And not only that, I want you to start paying our players the market rate so I can attract better players to Tottenham, and this is a list of players I want, and please go and get them or else I'm off. So, you know, he's just in a wonderful position.
And Real Madrid might come in at the same time.
I have a feeling he'll be at Real Madrid next season.
What do you reckon?
Well, I heard David Heitner of The Guardian speaking on the radio last night, and he was talking about going to Poch's press conference earlier this week, just after the Jose Mourinho news had broken, and talking about how they asked him about the January transfer window. And Pochettino didn't say it on the record, but he did that elephant ears thing that you do with your tracksuit bottoms, where he pulled them out to say, the cupboard is bare. Now, I think Pochettino wanted to see through the Spurs project, which was to lead the club into the new stadium. But that's been delayed now. That's not his fault. So he will get to do that, but perhaps not in the way that he wanted to. But if he's an ambitious manager and he wants money to spend, then he must have a look around to see what else is available. And Manchester United could be a golden opportunity for him.
The only thing he would do, he's a smart guy. He must look at every Manchester United manager since Ferguson and how badly that has gone. Now, I know football managers always back themselves. They have ego. He will back himself to do better. But there's a warning in there somewhere that maybe that's not a job for now that you should be touching. Hmm. And, obviously he'll weigh that up. But I think he should be careful.
And there's been talk of a $40 million fee for buying Pochettino out of his contract, which would make him United's joint fifth biggest signing. But it seems fair enough, actually, doesn't it? I mean, like if he's the guy... I think there's a problem at United that every time something bad happens, they cut to Fergie in the stands, and it's
I've got a theory about this. From the time Moyes was there, I thought Ferguson should have stayed out of the way, because this happened after Busby left, stopping the manager. There was a problem. I think the world of Alex Ferguson. Obviously, anyone loves football should do, but I think his presence, even just at games, away games at Everton or whatever, and he's sitting in the stand, I don't think that's helpful. I think he should have taken some time away from it completely.
Well, I think in that first season under Moyes, he stayed away. I mean, I was at the game where he actually reappeared, and it probably was sort of five, six, seven games into the season, by which point things were already... He couldn't keep away.
And he's earned the right to go, right?
And who's going to tell him not to turn up?
Yeah, and it sounds somewhat ludicrous, perhaps, criticising that, but I think there's a bigger issue where that's maybe not helpful. How big a part of that plays, I don't know, but I'm not sure it's useful for the managers at the time.
But Ewan, who would you ask for advice if you were a manager of Manchester United? Would it be Ed Woodward or would it be Alex Ferguson? Now, one thing that Jose Mourinho didn't do, because the two don't get on, is turn to Alex Ferguson.
That's what you have to do, right? Even if you're Pochettino, whoever's there, it's almost, if you were seen chatting, and it's all smoke and mirrors, whatever, but if you were seen just having a quick chat with him just before kickoff.
Yeah, and Sir Alex himself did it with Sir Matt Busby. You know, by this point, Matt Busby was a guy in his 70s. You know, Ferguson's written about, you know, the smell of his pipe smoke, you know, down the hallway, and he'd go and just have a chat, just a brief chat. That was all it required.
Do you think Solskjaer's viewed as less of a threat, in inverted commas? A little bit softer than Mark Hughes might be, or Steve Bruce might be? Or
it's a bit of a worry, actually, because, you know... The player power in this dressing room now, those players are going to get notions above their station. You know, oh, we got rid of Marino. You know, it's going to... who's the Sergio Ramos type in there, you know, who sort of sits like Colonel Kurtz and decides who can be in charge?
So interesting to see what side Solskjaer picks on Saturday, isn't it?
Well, I heard one thing during this week, which was obviously a lot of the players thought Jose Mourinho was too hard on them. But there's a worry now that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer might be too soft on them. So you're in a sort of, you know, Goldilocks situation. You know, is anything right for them? And we're going to find out, aren't we?
We are. Right, that'll do for part one and part two. We'll ask Barry to open the Carabao Cup box. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the 22nd of January, Barry, we're playing the Liberty Hall Theatre in Dublin. Me, you, Lars and Barney.
Yes, we are. Yes.
Sold out.
Yeah, who knew Barney Ronay was so popular in Dublin?
So they've announced another date.
Brilliant.
The night before, the 21st of January. So far, 5% of tickets sold.
Have we bitten off more than we can chew?
Our limit was one full Liberty Hall Theatre. So if you are coming on the 22nd, please also come on the 21st. And we'll all hang out on the next day as well, do some sightseeing and all of that. Come along, please. Right.
Tickets come in a very convenient Christmas stocking shape, I believe, if you fold them in a certain way.
And if you've got very good post between now and Christmas. Now, Barry,
I believe you print them off on this newfangled thing called the internet.
Stop it. That Jose's just found.
Yeah.
11% of tickets sold. What? We just sold 6% in the last 5 seconds. It's so exciting. Also, let me point you in the direction of Guardian's top 100 players in the world, which is running at the moment. I put my top 40 in, and the football editor replied going, you can't have Dion Dublin at 39. Yeah. And then he emailed to say, you've also left out Luka Modric. So I slipped him in at 3, pushed everyone down one.
That's a brilliant feature, and an awful lot of work goes into it. And the absolute ingratitude in the comments section underneath is worth the price of admission alone, that price being zero. But oh, that thing, it generates such fury among people. It's like Sports Personality of the Year, you know. Just this innocuous thing that generates seething mass rage.
Hey, Barry, open the box.
Okay, here we go.
I think he's slowing down a little bit, isn't he?
He's a bit.
Maybe he'll get us to the final. So then, the quarterfinals. Arsenal 0, Tottenham 2. Pochettino applauding his fans at the end. Was that a poignant goodbye? They will ask every time Pochettino applauds his fans. Oh, this was a good game, John, wasn't it?
Yeah. What was it? John Motson, I saw a crisp, competitive cup tie. That's in 101 great goals. It's a goal. I think it's a goal by Gordon Davis for Manchester City. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, great game, great goals. Showing how Pochettino's teams can play, especially on the break. You give him a chance, you give him the space that Arsenal did, especially that second goal from Dele Alli, which I would say is probably the goal I've enjoyed most this season.
Really?
Just fantastic, because it was one of those where you thought, what's he going to do now? And he, you know, I'm glad he didn't have the same worries about what he was going to do now. Just, you know, got him a touch into the goal. One of those where the ball's dropping in and he has the time to celebrate. Fantastic goal.
He scored 75 goals or something and he's 22. And I think Gerrard and Lampard were like 27,
yeah,
28 when they hit that level. And also Harry Kane, I think it might have been his first touch. Pretty much comes on.
Unbelievable pass.
Takes the ball out of the sky, turns. I mean, he was afforded quite a lot of space by the makeshift Arsenal defence.
Yes, Arsenal, I think, Koscielny came on at half-time after being dreadful against Southampton at the weekend. And Rob Holding, who's out for the season, is looking like a big miss for Arsenal at the moment. After that extended unbeaten run, Arsenal do look a bit shaky, or have looked a bit shaky the last couple of games.
They looked shaky during that run, didn't they? There was quite a few games they got away with it, I thought. So it's a wee bit like the chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah.
No.
Well, it was a strange run where they haven't been in the lead at half time in the league once, I don't think. And yet kept coming back, which is, you know, is also a sign of resilience, I guess.
I'm not sure that statistic is particularly important, or certainly not as important as people are making out.
I mean,
football match lasts 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter when you take the lead as long as you're leading at 90 minutes. You know, this is going back to when Laurie Sanchez was at Fulham and doing really badly, and he kept arguing that if football games only lasted an hour, they'd be third in the Premier League. You know, well, sorry, Laurie, that's not how it works.
I think the point with them, I remember Everton, they played, they could be 1-0 down, but if any team got that second or third goal that they perhaps deserved, it's a different story. I think that was the point. Mm-hmm. Then Arsenal couldn't have retrieved it.
Mm. I thought Gazzaniga played very well in goal for Spurs. One brilliant save.
From Ramsey, wasn't it?
Yeah,
onto the post. It was quite like the save the Crystal Palace keeper made last week against Leicester.
And Ben Davies was playing centre-back as well for Spurs. That was slightly makeshift. Another dumb fan throwing a plastic bottle and hitting Dele Alli on the head. So hopefully they'll find him.
Is this stuff getting worse, or is that rivalry getting worse? But
it's hard to tell, isn't it? I mean, because one idiot.
But it's the second successive idiot.
True.
Yeah. And I mean, in Scotland, it's been recurring this season. There's been loads of incidents. I think it is getting worse.
It's on the way back. I mean, is it, again, not to go too sort of geopolitical, is it a reflection of the times? You know, there is that sort of anger and stupidity.
General lawlessness.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's possible because people see videos retweeted and then go, oh, here's a thing you can do, right? I mean, maybe that's a...
Well, hasn't there been sort of a worrying... I don't know if it's a new thing, but up at Hearts, your team, where there's various nationalists...
coins. And the Hibs manager got hit with a coin.
No, but wasn't there a sort of a Tommy Robinson thing where a group of jambos were pictured?
A charity thing with Tommy Robinson masks on, that was all a bit weird.
But
thankfully, I don't know very much about that, and I don't really want to. But
So maybe it is getting worse. I don't know. Leicester 1, City 1. Brilliant from the Carabao Cup to do penalties after 90 minutes. I mean, everybody, I don't know anyone who is yearning for extra time then. What an amazingly bad penalty shootout. Whose was the worst, would you say? I mean, Sterling did Panenka it over the bar, and arguably you have to hit the target with a Panenka. Madison stutters, and the keeper doesn't go, and then he's completely flummoxed. And Fuchs just thought Fuchs it and hit it as hard and as high as he possibly could.
The worst one, and I'm having to look up his name, apologies, Kaglar Soyuncu.
Remind me of his one.
It just the softest sort of back pass to the opposing goalkeeper.
That's a real
Leicester.
Opportunity missed by Leicester, don't you think? I mean, they made a lot of changes.
It's inexplicable why they didn't put out a stronger team.
They're not going to get relegated.
They're
right?
not going to get relegated.
They're not going to come sixth.
Yeah. It's a bona fide chance to win a trophy, and you just wonder why. Why didn't he pick a stronger team? But then maybe he just wants to give squad players a run out and thought they, you know, might acquit themselves better, but. And they did, because, or they did acquit themselves okay because they got the penalties. But yeah, it does seem like an opportunity wasted.
Puel was manager of Southampton two seasons ago. They got to the final of the League Cup and were quite unlucky not to beat Jose Mourinho's Manchester United. And that did him no favours whatsoever because he got sacked at the end of the season. I think they finished ninth, which, you know, for Southampton now seems like a pretty exalted position.
So you think Claude Puel is having a dig at the Southampton owners by playing a wicked team for Leicester?
I think he's realised that league position is the way to protect his own position rather than
surely a chat with your boss to say, I'm going to go for this. This might impact us. We might finish 15th instead of 12th.
Yeah. Well, if you're a Leicester
fan, maybe he did have that chat.
If you're a Leicester fan, you would be annoyed, wouldn't you? I mean, the fans would love a cup final.
Of course.
A day out. I mean, even the final itself, never mind winning the cup. Supporters love that kind of thing.
Yeah, trip to Wembley, yeah. But that's how we think, but people within football don't. And I'm not sure the attendances at all these Carabao Cup games were big anyway, you know.
Is it becoming a total irrelevance? I mean, I struggle to remember who won the Carabao Cup from one year to the next.
Maybe that penalty shootout was an example of that. Maybe even there they were just messing about.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
But like, you know, if you talk to, it is those teams sort of between 6th and 17th. And even if you talk to Birmingham fans, right, who went down when they won it, or with the FA Cup Wigan fans, they now, if you ask them, they say, I'm glad we won it and went down. I wouldn't take staying up that season and not winning that trophy.
Even I always think Newcastle have been a disgrace with this stuff. I mean, Newcastle haven't won anything forever. Mm. Playing weakened teams in cup competitions, it makes no sense. Try and win something. Rather than finishing 12th versus 15th. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Leicester City didn't seem to be taking that seriously on their Twitter feed either. The photo of their starting lineup, Soyuncu, is that how you pronounce it? I mean, his head is not on his body. I'm not even sure Harry Maguire's head is on his body there either. They clearly just don't have those photos of those players. Chelsea are through. They beat Bournemouth 1-0. They had most of the play. Arthur Boric made some decent saves from Barkley, Giroud, and especially from Willian. Loftus-Cheek hit the post. And finally, Eden Hazard with a strike that bounced off Charlie Daniels and went in. Burton won at the Riverside. Jake Hesketh reacting well after Burton hit the post, made a sort of great tackle and then fired it home. Nigel Clough says, I can't quite believe it yet. It's one of the standout games in this club's history. And that's great for Burton to get to a semi-final, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I only saw highlights of this game, but it looked quite entertaining. Borough had a lot of good chances, and the fans that did go to the Riverside, which was far from full, were very, very angry with their team at the end of the game. But
Aidan Flint had an amazing chance. I mean, he managed to head it wide from inside the goal, virtually.
he lay face down on the turf for quite a long time after that one. It's brilliant for Burton. I presume in the run-up to the semi-final, we will get the price or the value of Manchester City's squad, the cost of their squad versus the cost of Burton's, and it'll be a ridiculous comparison. I would imagine Burton's squad's probably worth about 10 million quid, if that. I had a look on Transfer Market, and they put the value, not the cost, but the value at, I think, near 6 million quid. But what annoys me about the Carabao Cup, and you say they go straight to penalties after 90 minutes and it's great, they're still having these two-legged semi-finals, which are far from great, and it basically rules out any chance whatsoever Burton have of getting into the final, because there's a chance they beat City in one over 90 minutes. There's zero chance they'll beat them over two legs.
I thought you were about to bring up Bradford. Wait,
well, Bradford beat Arsenal and then Aston Villa over... They beat Aston Villa over two legs, didn't they? Back
but
in
Aston Villa are not Man City.
Yes, oh, yeah. Right. That's why I suddenly
that's why you
myself
didn't say
off.
It.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where would you play it? Where would you play a one-off Burton-Man City semi-final?
Not at Wembley, please.
That'd be a problem, wouldn't it? I don't know where they would play.
Play it at
Villa Park?
Villa Park, maybe. Yeah.
City Ground, at Forest or something like that, yeah.
The Craig Bellamy controversy on Tuesday night, so after Man City and Burton had won, but before last night's games, he said, well, great win for Burton, but they have got Man City in the semi-finals. Social media has gone into meltdown that either it's a massive fix that Craig Bellamy is in on, or... He can see the future.
How would Craig Bellamy, of all people, know this?
Well, I correctly announced what the Nations League semi-finals would be in the top tier before the draw was made. I was completely right, and I'm not in on any big fix.
Are you and Craig Bellamy in some Illuminati members?
Warming balls together?
Any time I meet Craig Bellamy, we have a secret handshake.
There's a lodge. There's a lodge in some basement somewhere, isn't there? Underneath London.
Robes.
So Spurs play Chelsea. Man City played Burton, as you say, over two legs, both in January. Who's been...
Sorry, just one other thing. The two-leg thing, it doesn't suit anyone there, because the other teams have, you know, going to have Champions League stuff to be worrying about.
But it's a relic, isn't it, that the League Cup used to be played over two legs in the earlier rounds, and that's why they retained it. So it's gradually been whittled down from a two-legged competition, and this is the last vestige of it. Do you know what? I don't mind it that much. I quite like the two-legged tie, domestic one. I do agree with you that a game like Burton and Manchester City can possibly become a no contest in the second leg. But actually, remember last season they played Bristol City, obviously a division above, and that went down to the last 10 minutes of the game for City to rescue it, Manchester City to rescue it. So, you know, the magic of the Carabao Cup, Barry.
Exactly right.
Get with it, man.
Who's been watching the Club World Cup?
Not me. Not a second of it.
I followed the penalty, the River Plate penalty shootout on Twitter.
Ah, so you're the designated expert for this.
Okay.
The UAE champions Al Ain, the hosts, will play Real Madrid in the final. And this has been quite an achievement from Al Ain, because they had a playoff against Team Wellington last week. They were 3-0 down. They came back to win that. Then they saw off the African champions Es Tunis, 3-0 in the quarterfinal, setting up a semi-final with River Plate, who, remember, eventually won the Copa Libertadores in Spain last week. Al Ain were 1-0 up after 3 minutes, 2-1 down after 16. They equalised. River Plate missed a penalty in normal time before Al Ain won on penalties. So that's that side of the draw. In the other semi-final, Kashima Antlers earned the right to play Real Madrid after seeing off Guadalajara in the quarters, but they lost 3-1 last night to Real Madrid. Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick. And there were excellent pitch microphones. You could really hear every kick and even every parry from the goalkeeper. How was following the penalty shoot on Twitter?
There's no one in the stadiums, then.
Well, there are some people in the stadium.
Because I was chatting to a Liverpool fan quite recently, and he admitted that he was getting ahead of himself in looking at, you know, where the World Club Championship would be, because he wanted to travel there if Liverpool won the Champions League. And he said where it is, he says there's only two hotels.
Okay. So all the teams in there and all the fans.
Yeah, and considering that River Plate won that game in Madrid last week or whatever, they've perhaps done a Jose Mourinho and just lived in a hotel for the last week or so.
God, they'll be awfully tired, won't they?
Oh, yeah.
You know. The biggest news of the week, Colin Calderwood announced as Cambridge United's new manager. By all accounts, he did okay at Nottingham Forest and Northampton. 100 years ago, has been assistant at Brighton and Villa, amongst other places, and at Hibs U, and he had a 24% win ratio. Can you heartily recommend him to me?
No. I think he did a very good job at Northampton, didn't he?
Yeah, I think
kind of
so.
Similar, I think,
yeah,
yeah. At Hibs, he was just so uninspiring as a guy. He was one of these guys you looked at and thought, how can you possibly be a motivator of men? He had no...
You see the Scottish Jose Mourinho?
Just no charisma. I was really surprised. I mean, he'd played at a top level. He played for Scotland last time they were in the World Cup, 1998. There you are. He lost his first three games, and then they won. I remember they won 3-0 at Ibrox. They beat Rangers, kind of out of the blue. but he kind of stuttered and stumbled on. I don't think he lasted a year. I just remember him being so uninspiring as a guy. Well, sorry, I don't mean
no, no, I don't mean
dread, but
I'm all aboard the Calderwood fun bus for now.
Northampton's maybe a far more valid comparison.
You're probably right. Anyway, just keep us in League Two, Colin, please. Fitbar, Barry, I know it's your corner.
I'm happy to hand over the reins.
Would you allow
to,
would you
allow, learned friend?
Would you allow your Murray into your corner for
absolutely
a bit? Is there space?
I will paint myself out of Fitbar corner, and Ewan can paint himself in.
How exciting is the Scottish Premiership this year, would you say?
It's very close. Without sounding overly cynical, I don't think these teams are very good. I still think Celtic will win the league pretty comfortably, but I'm not convinced that the teams top to middle of the league who are close are actually that strong. I think sometimes we're anxious to confuse competitiveness with actual quality that I'm not convinced exists.
But, I mean, does that matter?
No. If people have been screaming out for years, they want some kind of challenge. They want it to look close. So from that point of view, this season has been good so far. Kilmarnock have been at the top of the league. Rangers have been at the top of the league. Hearts have been at the top of the league, and that has excited people. But I think when you scrape below the surface, I'm not convinced about the strength of it.
How is for Brendan Rodgers? I mean, I've written here, like, it's all about 10 in a row for Brendan Rodgers, right? Otherwise, he would have gone before now, wouldn't he?
Well, does 10 in a row appeal to Brendan Rodgers?
I don't know. I don't
think it does. Nah. Brendan Rodgers wanted to go during the summer, and Celtic basically wouldn't let him.
Are you coming back into your corner, Barry?
I do apologise. No,
that's okay.
Brendan Rodgers' issue, I mean, Brendan Rodgers regards himself, not unreasonably, as a top-tier, top-level coach. His problem is, where does he go from Celtic? Legitimately, what kind of job will he get? And that's a problem for him. 10 in a row matters massively to Celtic's fans and certain people at Celtic. Is Brendan Rodgers consumed by 10 in a row? I don't think so.
Where are they up to now?
They've done 7. This year, I think, inevitably win the league. This will be 8. Now, I think far more significant for Brendan Rodgers, for example, is getting out of this Europa League group, which was a tough group, and well done to him getting out of that. I think that should mean more to him, making inroads in Europe, because other people notice that. If you win 10 leagues in a row in Scotland, is anyone new in the current situation? Is there a wider resonance to that? I'm not convinced.
And I suppose it's the Premier League he presumably would want to come back to, and what level of...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer. I'm quite fascinated by where he would go. He wants to work abroad. That's something he could do. But, I mean, he's not going to get an Arsenal job, a Spurs job, a Liverpool job again, a Manchester United job, or a Man City job.
I could see, when we talked about Claude Puel before, Leicester is a possibility.
I think that's true.
It's about the level. Leicester have got money, an ambition, and have given their managers a fair swing. So, if you're Brendan Rodgers, that would be the type of job.
And listen, Brendan Rodgers has been very good for Celtic, but Celtic have been very good for Brendan Rodgers. They've kind of relaunched his career. He's adored there. He's seen one of their own people. So that fit has worked for both sides. But I think there was trace of this last season. I think the Scottish scene in general will inevitably frustrate him because he sees himself at a higher level.
With Brendan Rodgers, I covered him quite a lot when he was at Liverpool, and he assumed this sort of Shankly light, messianic persona. Mm. Is it similar at Celtic?
Yeah, there's traces of that. Some of it's quite funny.
Yeah. Has he toned down the...
A little bit, but again, there are traces of...
Yeah.
You would laugh. I don't want to say David Brent, because that's unfair, but there are amusing examples of him taking himself a bit seriously or taking his position a bit seriously. Traces of it. Listen, I think he's a good guy. I like him. I got on well with him.
Yeah.
But there are...
He's very welcoming, I've found, when I've interviewed him as well.
Yeah, and he... He's aware of what you write. He reads things, so he will take you to task about something if he thinks that's...
Do you reckon he name searches on Twitter?
I don't think so.
How's Stevie G doing? He's got... I mean, I was really surprised when he took that job, because I just thought it's a massive gamble and he could have stayed at Liverpool and learnt under Klopp.
And good on him for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's entirely to his credit.
And he's arguably got, what, 2 more years after this one if he's going to stop Celtic getting the 10, right?
Yeah. Steven Gerrard is really, really impressive as a guy, and you know, you speak to him and think that's a football manager. They did really well in Europe, starting at such an early qualifying round, getting all the way through to within one game of getting out of the group, but they basically just ran out of steam and were pretty poor against Rapid Vienna. He has improved Rangers. But I would caveat that by saying that was quite an easy thing to do, given where they were. And I'm not convinced by a lot of his recruitment in the summer. And it was wholesale, and there have been some successes. But I think longer term, they might get found out a little bit in terms of how far they are still adrift of Celtic. And their core task has got to be to separate themselves as the clear second force in the country, which they haven't yet done, or to be honest, look that close to doing. So that'll be interesting over the next few months.
I find Steven Gerrard's approach to management slightly strange insofar as he didn't take criticism well himself. You know, if you read his book, he got very upset because Rafael Benitez didn't call him Stevie and, you know, didn't give him the arm around his the shoulder he wanted. But he seems to have no compunction whatsoever about digging his Rangers players out in public.
Very strongly, yeah. There are slight traces, it's too early to say, but there are slight traces that he has that thing where it's difficult, because he was such a great player, of dealing with players that are obviously clearly vastly inferior to what he was. Only slight traces, because he's very, very hard and critical of them.
My observation, whenever I switch on Scottish football, I always seem to be a Rangers game. I've seen next to nothing of Celtic this season. Is that when Rangers play, there's always a sending off or some sort of refereeing controversy, and Stevie's face like thunder, and he's never the biggest smiler in the world. There's always some complaint with a referee.
Well, they've had loads of sendings off, including in Europe.
Yeah.
Well, Alfredo Morelos has been sent off 3 times in the league.
He got one rescinded, didn't he? There has been, but in general, it's actually been a controversy-laden Scottish season in general. Rangers have been involved in quite a lot of it. Hearts have been involved in quite a lot of it. So that has been a general theme. But Gerrard himself warned them about their discipline. They said they were letting themselves down, so that has been a slight problem.
So Stevie G is doing that. How's Stevie C doing at Kilmarnock?
Oh, he is the Messiah. Wonderful.
Isn't he? Steve Clark has done a fantastic job there.
Yeah. I mean,
out of the blue?
Well, the impressive thing with that was he has largely inherited players. He hasn't made wholesale changes to what he inherited at Kilmarnock, who were kind of perennial relegation fodder, scraping to stay up last few games of the season. And he's completely turned that around to the point where, well, they were top of the league. They're now at the top end of the table. They're not pretty to watch. It's not a criticism. They do exactly what it says in the tin, and it's very, very effective. It's going to be a shame when I don't know what his plan will be. He will have a plan, but when he leaves Kilmarnock, I think that'll be a real shame, because he's taken them to heights that they would never have thought possible.
And before we vacate Football Corner, you obviously split your time between Scottish football and doing the golf.
Yeah.
Would you say footballers or golfers are nicer?
Ooh. Footballers, funnily enough, take criticism better, because they're used to being criticised. Golfers aren't. If a golfer is even lightly criticised, they say, whoa, what's happening here? Because they're not used to it.
Which golfer gets most angry when you criticise them? Mickelson is furious with you, is he?
No. I'm not a Mickelson fan. I can't really imagine him being furious. But, I mean, you know, footballers, I just think, get hardened to it. They can be spiky, but I think if you dig at football people, they kind of accept that's part of the job. But golfers, in that environment, it doesn't really exist, so they don't take kindly to it. That's a general thing. It's not really applicable to individuals.
Oh, I was just hoping you'd come out and say, Fuzzy Zeller is an arse. That's what I wanted.
Probably true, but that's before my time.
Right, thanks. Thanks for that. We'll leave Football Corner, and in part 3, look ahead to the Premier League fixtures this weekend. Welcome to part 3 of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Before we look ahead to the Premier League games this weekend, let's talk to Archie Rintutt, rounding up the midweek Bundesliga action. Archie, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Max. Very well.
This week has a special name, doesn't it? What is it?
The English Woche, which just translates simply as the English Week.
Okay, for why?
The Bundesliga. Because that's the whole concept of playing 3 games in a week to people in Germany. It's just that simple, really.
All right. And Dortmund finally lost.
They did. I was in Düsseldorf on Tuesday evening, and it was weird, because Düsseldorf's plan was very simple, which was to stay compact, sit deep, and just hit the ball over the top to Watford loanee Dodi Lukebakio, who is having a great season for Düsseldorf, it has to be said. He was dropped for disciplinary reasons a week or two ago, which was actually just to do with him displaying unsportsmanlike conduct in his celebration against Werder Bremen, which was just basically trying to get the ball and run back to the halfway line. Anyway, Luca Bacchio is quicker than any Bundesliga defender so far this season, as he proved with his hat-trick away at Bayern Munich a few weeks ago, and again against this Borussia Dortmund defence, who I think banked on being a bit quicker than him, but weren't. And Dortmund were idealists. I think it showed you the importance of Jadon Sancho in this team, because he didn't start, neither did Paco Alcácer, the top scorer in the Bundesliga, although he's been making most of his impacts off the bench, as he did again on Tuesday night, his 10th goal off the bench this season. So he's top scorer in the league, joint top scorer with Luka Jovic of Eintracht Frankfurt. But the fact that when they went 2-0 down to a fantastic strike, has to be said, by the Düsseldorf right-back, John Zimmer, when that happened, I've not seen that much beer fly through the stadium in the Bundesliga this season. But Dortmund were idealists without Sancho. I don't think that you can argue that Christian Pulisic is now behind him in the pecking order. And I think Sancho is probably the best dribbler in the division. For me, he's overtaken Kingsley Coman, having seen Coman against Leipzig last night for Bayern. So a disappointment for Dortmund. They're still 6 points clear of Bayern, but I think that certainly a wake-up call for them.
How was the Bayern-Leipzig game? Fun?
It was tight. There wasn't much going on between them. I thought that the Leipzig centre-backs actually were excellent. Deo Upamecano and Ibrahima Konate, who proved themselves quicker than Kingsley Coman, which is not something that I think many have managed to do in the Bundesliga. But ultimately, Bayern's still lacking creativity, you would say, that they struggled to find a way through Leipzig. Leipzig did enough to control Bayern for long periods of the game, but without actually managing to create anything themselves. Peter Gulácsi, the Leipzig goalkeeper, former Liverpool goalkeeper as well, coming up with two save of the season contenders. But then Franck Ribéry, who came on for Serge Gnabry, who was injured during the first half, managing to send two Leipzig defenders flying in Hal Robson-Kanu fashion before striking the winner. So Bayern not convincing at all, I would say. But I think a bit of game management there won them that, particularly the fact that Ralf Rangnick, the Leipzig coach, he decided not to use any substitutes until the final 10 minutes. And by that point, Leipzig had run themselves into the ground. And Leipzig having been billed as mini Liverpool by some of the local press as well, I think that Liverpool would have seen that performance by Bayern last night and not thought that there's too much there at the moment right now. I mean, a lot can change between now and February for sure. But Bayern right now, they're improving and have done in the last few weeks, but I still think that there's a long way to go. I don't think that Robert Lewandowski's in top form right now. He's letting a lot of chances go, and I'm not somebody that necessarily reads everything into expected goals all the time, but the fact that expected goals says he should have five more this season tells you a lot about his finishing.
And big game on Friday, Dortmund v Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are second. How key is it for them to get something for this game, for there to be a title race?
For Gladbach to get something.
Yeah.
Gladbach's away form is something that trips them up. I mean, they've won every single home game this season, and Torgan Hazard has been on fire, apart from the fact that he managed to Panenka his penalty over the bar during the week against Nuremberg. That was one of his less auspicious moments, shall we say. But otherwise, Gladbach have been superb. They've managed to restructure their medical department, which has been key because they had so many injuries last season. They had nearly a whole team worth of players out. But Dieter Hecking as well, who I think is underestimated in Germany by some, despite the fact he helped coordinate that Wolfsburg side, which saw Kevin De Bruyne flourish a few years ago, and they won the DFB Cup here in Germany and finished second. He's done excellently to really put that side together. So I think that even if Gladbach were to win, which there is a good chance because Dortmund have three of their first-choice centre-backs out. Abdou Diallo is injured, so is Manuel Akanji, and Dan Axel Zagadou as well. So there's certainly opportunities. I would expect goals. But whether Gladbach can actually mount a sustained title challenge, I don't know. I don't know whether they've got the attack going forward in these games away from home.
Archie, thanks for your time.
Cheers, Max. All the best.
Archie Rintuck there, out there in Germany. Premier League fixtures this weekend. Wolves-Liverpool on Friday night. I'm looking forward to this one, Barry.
I am as well, and I have a feeling Wolves are going to beat Liverpool tomorrow night.
I've got this feeling too, and I think I'm totally wrong. Am I wrong, John?
Well, Wolves are on a decent run of form, so why not?
And they're better against the better sides.
Yes, Nuno Espirito Santo sets his team up in a certain way, and he actually sets them up every time the same way for whoever they're playing. But I do think that formation does suit playing against the better teams, the teams that are going to attack them.
And if Wolves do win, who will be the only remaining manager in British football who hasn't lost a league game this season?
Are we back in the corner?
Possibly.
I'm going to ask Ewan.
Dick Campbell at Arbroath.
Ah, right.
Unbeaten in the league all season.
What division are Arbroath in?
Scottish League One.
Okay.
Here's a question. How old is Dick Campbell?
That's a good question. 60. I'm going to guess 65.
Okay, because it doesn't sound like a young manager's name, does it, really?
Dick and his twin brother, Pink.
He is 65. Bang on. There
that
you go.
Fantastic. Well done.
He's currently serving some outrageous touchline ban for. He went on the pitch and accosted a referee and various other indiscretions. But Arbroath are unbeaten in the league.
And Arbroath are Arbroath, you know, the money bag side of this division. Is this, you know, should they be?
No, I think just Dick's did a good job.
Well done, Dick Campbell.
So you're saying that Arbroath haven't got a Portuguese sugar daddy?
No, not at all. Unless there's local fishermen putting money in
them. They're not owned by a rogue state,
no.
Are they?
Well, not as far as I know. But so part of me kind of hopes Liverpool lose this unbeaten thing so Dick can be the last man standing.
The Saturday fixture list in the Premier League, Arsenal-Burnley, Bournemouth-Brighton, Chelsea-Leicester, Huddersfield-Southampton, Man City play Palace, Newcastle-Fulham. I mean, that could be fun, couldn't it, Barry?
It could, yes. I mean, I don't really know how to sell it. I'd probably wait to see what the final score is before I decide whether it's been fun or not.
I mean, that's, you know, if that's your attitude to previewing football matches.
I don't really see the point of previewing football matches. You know, these matches are on. Someone might win. They might not.
Do you never bet on them then? On that?
Pardon?
Do you never bet on them?
I haven't had a bet in, I think, I'm not sure I've had a bet since the World Cup, to be honest.
Oh, well, that's fair enough.
That bet was Christian Benteke to be top goal scorer, wasn't it?
No.
Oh. You'd kind of be previewing it if you were betting on it, wouldn't you? You'd be trying to...
Well, no, I've said I think Wolves will beat Liverpool. They may well not. And people who are eager to scoff and laugh, get your tweets in before the game starts. I'm not interested in hearing from you after it ends.
West Ham play Watford. Obviously, the Cardiff City-Manchester United game is interesting for lots of reasons. And on Sunday, Everton play Spurs. Sorry, Barry.
Well, going back to the Newcastle-Fulham one, Fulham have to learn how to defend or they are doomed. And I will be interested to see how their defence gets on against Salman Rondon, who's having an interesting season. You know, he's not setting the world on fire. He's no Alan Shearer, but he is a good player. And quite how Fulham's defence will handle him, yeah, it'd be intriguing, and I suspect not very well will be the answer.
One of the worst decisions I've seen all season was a non-penalty in the Newcastle-Wolves game, where the guy got his nose whacked with an elbow at a cross. I forget who the player was.
Oh, yeah, no, I remember it.
It's an unbelievably bad decision.
I think Josselu got
yes,
it.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And it was Bolly?
Yes, Willy Bolly. It was Willy Bolly.
Cracked him square in the face.
Yeah.
And Rafa Benitez said, "We need the VAR." and he said that in his press conference, in his radio interview, and in his TV interview. He'd obviously prepared that line. We need the VAR.
Now, here are some great bits of football you should go and watch right now. From Orléans versus PSG in the French Cup quarterfinal, PSG are 2-1 up. In the last minute, the Orléans keeper goes up for a set piece. The ball breaks to Mbappe, who has to score. He sprints through. But for some quite extraordinary defending from Gauthier Pinot, who clears it off the line. It's quite amazing. Liam asked this question on the subject of PSG. What do the panel think about PSG outcast and Stoke City flop Jesse allegedly spending €5,000 to eliminate his ex-girlfriend from the Spanish version of Big Brother? Apparently, his ex-girlfriend is someone called Aura Ruiz, who is, I believe, a sort of Instagram influencer type person. And she was on the Spanish version of Big Brother. And he spent 5,000 euros on texting the show to get her eliminated. And she was the first one to be thrown out of the house. Is this petty or do we applaud this commitment?
It's commendably petty, I would say. I take my hat off to him and salute him. I thought, first when you said he paid 5,000 euros to eliminate her, I was going, where is this going? But yeah, I love a good bit of spite.
I think that requires further psychological assessment. It's a bit worrying, to be honest, I think.
A company I used to work at, when Big Brother first started, it was quite a big sensation in this country about the year 2000 or so. And I worked in an office where, for some reason, you could phone the 089 or 090 numbers.
For free?
For free from the office. And then suddenly, because Big Brother was so popular, people were using the phone line in the office to vote out who they wanted to, that suddenly those lines were removed because people had been abusing Big Brother.
Are people in France getting bored, by the way, of PSG's status and dominance? The people in French football types get fed up with it.
Yes, and I think some of the PSG fans are as well, that it's, what is the point of this?
What's the point of anything?
No, it's just you get it in Scotland. I mean, in Scotland, people say Celtic's dominance is boring and harmful. And actually,
but they wouldn't want them out. It happens elsewhere. I didn't want to have this, should Celtic be in the Premier League discussion? But the other Scottish fans wouldn't want Celtic to not be in the division, would they?
Some of them would, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there's a body of opinion that Rangers and Celtic. Yeah, some people think that. I don't, personally, but some people would rather. And Celtic are openly frustrated by their environment and think they should be in a bigger pond, so they would be delighted.
From the Dutch Cup, AZEK Alkmaar versus Zwolle, an amazing chip from a guy called Mats Sundjens. Have you seen this?
I have. It is
absolutely brilliant. Literally, there is no justice in football. It is the most glorious chip over the goalkeeper from 20 yards. He's running at pace, sees the keeper off his line, chips it over the keeper, but he's put so much spin on the ball, it doesn't go in.
Bounces on the line and away.
Oh, it's totally unbelievable. So look, our hearts are with you, Mats Sundjens.
Are we sure that didn't go over?
Is it not over the line?
Oh, well, I mean,
really close.
That's what I thought. I thought it could have been. Well, it wasn't given, though. Barry, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Oh, yeah, you're not on the Christmas pods, are you?
No. Are you having a drunk one on Monday?
Oh, producer Jonathan got you a present.
Oh?
Yeah. There you are, Barry.
Oh, big white envelope.
It's not wrapped.
Oh, it's a calendar. It's the 2019 Scottish CAFU Alan Hutton calendar. Thank you very much. I don't know what to say. Thoughtful gift.
Talk us through some of his poses.
Well, on the cover.
What a goal he scored the other week.
I know.
We've got Alan Hutton celebrating in front of the terraces, a two-fist clenched salute.
I hope March is a two-footed tackle, don't you?
So we go to March, where it's my birthday is in March. February's a knee slide in front of the fans.
Surely one of them is him getting sent off.
March is him trying to get the ball off Theo Walcott in his Arsenal days, in Theo Walcott's Arsenal days, while Walcott's shielding the ball. I would imagine this is the only Alan Hutton calendar that will be bought by anyone, apart from perhaps Alan Hutton and his immediate family.
Alan Hutton was so much bigger than Theo Walcott.
He's like twice the size, isn't he? Yeah.
What have you got against Alan Hutton?
Nothing whatsoever. I'm just checking to see if there's a picture of him in a Germany number 5 shirt. You know, Hutton dressed as lamb.
Very good. Oh. Hey, John, thanks for coming. Happy Christmas.
My pleasure. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you, Ewan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I would say happy Christmas to everyone, but we're back on late on the 23rd or early on Christmas Eve for the Christmas Not As Sober As We Normally Are special, and we'll speak to you then.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.